ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, February 5th, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always. Dwayne, today it's a special day. It's a great day. It's almost a holiday. It's Major League Soccer kit reveal day. You know the kits that we've been seeing around everywhere for the last week? Well, they'll be officially revealed tonight.
Oh, well, no, it's going to be so surprising when I see the three stripes on every shoulder. It's going to really surprise me.
Yeah, no, exactly. Okay, we were a bit tongue-in-cheek here, but it is exciting kit reveal day. We'll see what every team will look like later tonight at the special event. A lot of clubs have already hinted at the potential look of these kits. It's the 25th season of Major League Soccer. Some branding or some color palettes will be inspired maybe from the early days of Major League Soccer, which led me to thinking, Gwen, and of course we won't spend the entire show on kits, which I could. I like to see myself as a fashionista of the soccer world. But we'll talk about the women qualifier later for the Olympic women qualifier in CONCACAF later on. We know who's going to face each other in the semifinal in the two games that are win and you're in for Tokyo 2020. We'll also talk about a potential loanee for the Montreal Impact, Lewis Binks coming out of Tottenham. U18 Academy of Tottenham Hotspur. So that's another topic of conversation for later. But let's start with Major League Soccer's kits. And Dwayne, of course, I don't really care about this year's kits. And the kits, of course, they've been called in the past cookie cutter, simple sometimes, and generic, also corporate, because it is a licensing exercise by Adidas with Major League Soccer. Adidas has the rights of all kits in Major League Soccer, so you don't see the diversity in designs. You do more now maybe than before, but at least the critics have often mentioned that you don't see the diversity in designs that you see in other leagues around the world, where there's more than one brand involved, where clubs have their own agreement and partnership agreement, sponsorship agreement to some cases with branding, with brands that are fashion brands and sports brands like Nike, Adidas, Warrior, most ugliest, the ugliest Liverpool jersey ever was the Warrior one for sure. But New Balance now in the game, of course. So there's something here to talk about, Dwayne. If you had the power to make something different in Major League Soccer towards kits, what would it be in your utopian fashion world of Major League Soccer?
With the caveat that they're just shirts, I would say this. Look, diversity is, you nailed it, diversity, right? Like, that's what people have an issue with. It isn't that individually any one of those kits is bad. It's that they're all the same. There's 12 white shirts in this league this year, and that's kind of frustrating people that like this sort of stuff. But ultimately, I guess it doesn't really matter. And I ultimately, as I said earlier, am a bit of an Adidas stan. I'm in my room right now, and I'm looking around my room, and I can literally see five things with three stripes on it. So
I agree. I like my Stan Smith. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was wearing Stan Smith before Stan Smiths were cool. I was probably 4 years old, and my dad had an old pair of Stan Smith. So that's like 1988, and I used to play with them. They were the coolest thing ever. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, oh no, no, those white with the green stripe. No, yeah, man, they're everything. But you know, I like to pretend I don't know fashion, but I have a bit of a style. It's fine, and I love Adidas. But anyway, look. Yeah, it's diversity. It really is. And that's a problem. I was at an event last night. I was watching the Canadian women play and qualify for the semifinals against Costa Rica. We'll talk about that later. And I was talking to some TFC people that were there also to have a TFC supporters meeting. And they all have seen TFC's kit already. And they say it's beautiful when you see it up front. And I think that's kind of what we have to go with, because what I've seen online
It's red.
Is yeah.
Which is like, yeah.
Well, and you've seen that the Impact one is, it's gray for some reason. There's no yeah. blue on it. Like, well, anyway.
If you play FIFA, you've seen the kits already. And people forget that announcement a few weeks and months ago now really fell between two chairs. That's a French expression that just means it fell into oblivion, by the way, when I say it fell between two chairs, if you're not aware. So it fell into oblivion, but EA Sports was a partner in this kit reveal thing, and there was supposed to be a component online, which happened. And you've seen the Montreal Grey kind of jersey. And you see on your screen for the last few minutes a montage of old jerseys of Major League Soccer back in the 90s, back in the baggy jersey type, you know, the Mutiny, the Green and Blue Mutiny, the DC United with the big, big white stripes in the front, you know. But it's just to give you a sense of where it went, where it's going. And, of course, it would be easy to say, okay, let's just open up the floodgates of the market. Let's make it an open market in Major League Soccer for clubs. And when it comes to 32, maybe that'll be the case. But, okay, so Macron, example, comes into the game. Macron is the Canadian Premier League official kit designer, fashion designer, because it's more than just the kits as well. So you do have other companies that would be willing to do so. Of course, Nike, the famous adversary, opponent, the eternal Coke to Pepsi of Adidas, I would say, would be involved to being back in Major League Soccer. So there's a lot of thinking of what it could be. You mentioned, though, one thing, and I don't agree with you. And you mentioned they're dress shirts. Are they? Are they? Or is it one of the extension of the identity of the club? Isn't it the biggest piece of almost, I don't want to say marketing, but it is the biggest piece of clothing for sure that you have your logo on. And it's an opportunity to communicate to your fans through design, through colors, through a look, a feel, an emotion into a piece of material. So to me, they're a bit more than just a shirt.
Okay, fine. Yeah, in general, you're right, Kevin. They are an extension of the club. They are the ultimate expression of the club in many ways, as you said. Like, let's put MLS on a shelf for a second. I think of my team in the Premier League. They're sky blue or baby blue or light blue, whatever you want to say. But nonetheless, that's when you see that color of blue, you think, if you're a soccer fan, you think Man City, right? You're absolutely right, but MLS is a bit different. And MLS, I think they aren't just kind of just shirts because they have such a uniform design, and that's the problem, right? We all want our club to be unique. You talked Macron a minute ago, and we obviously covered Campiel as well. To me, as much as some people hate the strip, my favorite strip in Campiel is absolutely York 9's because it's original and it looks unique, and you go, like, that's something. That's a brand right there. It's what all they got right last year, but fine. That's a brand, you know, and we want our teams to have something that we can identify with that is unique and is theirs. And it's kind of the issue that we're having with these strips, right? They're all kind of the same. There are three stripes in the shoulder. They're a variation of a color.
Now it's going to become a conversation, almost more of a marketing and business relationship with your fans, and how much of dollar are you asking your fans to spend. But is there something about Major League Soccer changing their kits too often that you cannot even identify with the kit long enough for it to become iconic? Can you imagine if, example, Juventus, after 2 years, decided to get rid of their white and black stripes and it never would become iconic? And I fear that with the amount of changes that the Major League Soccer and Adidas does do on the kits in a two-year basis. Usually, every year, you have a new jersey. 1 year, it's your road. 1 year, it's your home. 1 year, it's the road. 1 year, it's your home. And when sometimes the timing is not perfect and it's different, and sometimes you stay 2-3 years with the same, and then league-wide, there's a mandate to change, like this year, or home or away. But isn't there something there about losing a bit of that partnership with your fandom? If you have a new jersey every year, you ask your fans, and then you have the disparity of the fans that doesn't necessarily have the money to buy a new $120 kit. If you're lucky, it's only $120 every year. to maintain the status of I'm up to date with my team. And so it becomes a larger conversation of society and how much we spend and the overspenditure of basically this corporate world. But is there something about identifiability with a iconic jersey that maybe stays the same for 5 to 10 years? You tweak little of it, just a color, but maybe something that stays the same. Should there be an embargo on how long a jersey stays, just for the purposes of fans being able to have a jersey that's relevant for more than a year? I think there's something there.
Of course there's something there. And look, the crassness of it, the commercialism of it that you're speaking of is something that I think a lot of people have issue with. Kevin, I only have one TFC strip. It's the one from 2007. In fact, it doesn't even have the sponsor on it. It just says Toronto on the front. So now that's completely come around to its hip to have that strip, right?
Because that was quick. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I know, it's fine. But you know, exactly. Like it really just is a marketing design to get more revenue into the club when you redesign your kit every bloody year. And it's part of the reason why I don't buy in fully to the whole kit release phenomena that's out there. Look, I'm human. I like my teams. I think some of them are pretty, some of them aren't. You know, for the record, from what I've seen, I like Salt Lakes. They look nice, but it's kind of crass too, right? Like, really, it's just a gouge. Like, yeah, I know you bought one last year, but we need another $120 from you again, right? Yeah. And that's...
And it goes deeper than that. The amount of jerseys not sold every year. Like, the amount of things that goes into the bargain bin, the amount of things that are overdone, overchanged, the changing of just branding to be able to do new product with it. I think... At least, because it's such an iconic piece of the game, the jersey. It's what the players wear when they do their exploits. So it's not just something trivial. It's one of the biggest iconic thing that you think about when you think of soccer. You think of the ball, you think of cleats, and you think of a jersey. That's what you think about. Sometimes a whistle, too, and grass. Okay, fine. But those are what strikes the imagination. The colors, the movement in that jersey. And maybe it's time in our society, at least in our bubble of soccer, to consider having an embargo. At least a minimum of 5 years. Keep your jersey for 5 years and maybe only have a third that you change. Maybe go back to that. That was a fun period in England where you had teams like Chelsea and others having the first and second jersey rarely change, if any. But then having a third jersey to satisfy the people that needed that extravagance, that change, and that willingness to pay more money to have something that not everyone has. So maybe it's time to go back to that model.
Well, you'd probably sell more of them too. Again, to look around my room, in my Manchester City kits, yes, I have a sky blue one, but I have six City jerseys, and one is sky blue. The other five are third jerseys. There's maroon, there's red, there's a purple. I have a purple one, which is really probably ugly in retrospect, but
I've seen that one. Yeah, I've seen that one. I've seen a few of them. But that's the thing. I have no Montreal Impact jerseys. I have practice jerseys because they were more affordable, and I was broke back then. Well, not back. I was broke, period. So I have a third kit from Chelsea. I have two of them. So there is something to that. And they're old kits that I got at the bargain bin, and I'm okay with that. And I think it's part of the whole culture of football. And sometimes the culture of football, it's not necessarily about the flashiness and the money, but it is about the grind. It is about League 2, League 1. And having, example, a League 1 jersey of Manchester City of the 70s must be worth a lot of money today. So there is something to that culture, that iconology, and that philosophy of treating the kit with respect, which I think we've lost, at least, in North America in 2020.
For sure. Look, yeah, again, it's a crass marketing exercise, and it's not going away. Obviously, they're going to continue to release these things every year, and it's unfortunate. But they're shirts. It's just a shirt. That's kind of where it comes down to me with it. Like, buy it if you want. Don't buy it if you don't want. ultimately you're going to get used to it. The colors are kind of the same normally. Yeah. So here we are.
And if you don't get used to it, it's fine. Just wait a year and it'll be different. On that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about, yeah, regular soccer. We'll talk about Ohlone maybe joining the Montreal Impact, and also a fun tidbit of information on the CONCACAF Women's Olympic qualifiers and more.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. We'll talk about Canada's 2-0 win against Mexico in just a couple minutes. Before that, Dwayne, I want to direct our listeners to our Patreon page, where in the next few probably hours and day or day, you'll find the next edition of the Do Solitude Soccer podcast, where Dwayne and I will talk about, of course, Canadian soccer. And Canadian soccer at its best, Olympic qualifiers, probably, but also Canadian Premier League and Canadian Premier League Players Union. Dwayne has some information on that, and we'll dive deep into it on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Canada 2, Mexico 0, Christine St. Clair 186.
Only 14 to go. Yeah, it was it was a game that that was a little concerning at times, the fact they couldn't break them down as quickly as they would, which really harkens back to France last year. That's that Sweden game in the round of 16, where they were ultimately eliminated from France, 2019, was a game where they had a lot of the ball. They looked good at times with the ball, but they could not get that final clinical pass in, right? And I saw a bit of that last night, and that's what I think. Maybe I'm a Canadian fan, so I'm going to find what to be worried about. And what I'm worried about is that, like, they need to be a little more clinical. They need to have that final pass. They need to be a little more direct when it comes to that last sort of moment of the attack. Otherwise, they're just holding the ball for no reason, right? But they've scored 22 goals in this tournament. They've allowed none.
That's a pretty good. That's a pretty good average. It's what, 7.8? Or so a game. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Well, and the zero is really where you should look at, too. They're averaging. I don't need a calculator to do this. Their goals against average is zero.
Zero plus zero divided by zero. Hold the zero. Yeah, zero.
Zero. It works out to zero. And that's good. And what I have said about the Canadian women's national team for the last little while, for anyone that wants to listen to me, is that they have been hard to beat. They have been frustrating to people that want them to be a lot, to be the best. But they've been pretty good when it comes to being difficult to break down or to even put in under pressure. And Mexico did not put them under, other than about, a 3-minute period in the second half.
I was going to say that big save by LeBay in that 3-minute period that you're talking about is maybe the only moment. And yeah, tactically, Canada got that right, got this game right. Of course, they had the two warm-up games, and no offense to Jamaica and St. Kitts and Nevis, but you conceded 9 and you conceded 11. So allow me to use the warm-up game type of a comparison here. They did have some confidence heading to the Mexico game, and you're right. And tactically speaking, we're seeing a progression under KHM, and we're seeing, I think, young players. Not necessarily, and I'm just using this Mexico game because you don't want to dominate and to not do it in a proper way where you might have some bad habits that continue and creep forward. You want to do it in the right way, being positioned, being open, replicable situations that you can do against other teams. And the first goal yesterday, just Jaden Revere, the way she got that run perfectly. She knew the perfect timing to give it to her teammate and then get herself open once again in the box, found Sinclair. Sinclair, clinical finish. That's a replicable goal. That's a goal created on the training pitch when players know each other's instincts and know each other's tendencies. And we are seeing this more and more under KHM. Over the last maybe just 3 games in this tournament, you're going to say, but there's a progression, and I like what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're always going to have a caveat with this, that they have not yet played the U.S., or Costa Rica in this case, because that's the one that matters. But nonetheless, there's going to be a caveat that they haven't. Who have they done this against? But I thought that there was no moment last night, as I said earlier, in which they were threatened, even though it was only 2-0. It didn't feel like that. It felt like a blowout, right? And as much as I would have liked to see more clinical finishing, it still was a very effective game that they played. You know, look, Sinclair's goal, as you said, like, it was so textbook. It was so well produced, other than her finish. Her finish was great, but her reaction to it said everything. She cheered, then she pointed, right?
She didn't stroke the ball the perfect way, but it was just at the right place, just a bit away from the goalkeeper's glove. But the entire build-up led to that tapping goal, which that's what you need to do. A tapping goal, then you don't necessarily require a player as talented as Sinclair, because they're once in a generation, if not generations. So you see where I'm going with the replicability of these goals. It doesn't matter if it's Sinclair or not. That would have been a goal.
Fair enough. Yeah. Look, I think a lot of people, when they break the CAN WNNT down, they worry about what it's going to look like in 3 years. But the issue is, it's not 3 years, right? Like, Sinclair can still finish those. So as long as you can still act like this and get it to Christine, then you're fine. Now, can Jordan Heinema do those same things in 3 years from now? I don't know. But we're going to find out in 3 years. Right now, we just need to beat Costa Rica on Friday.
On Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on One Soccer, Canada, Costa Rica, the winner qualifies for Tokyo 2020. If there's such a thing, by the way, with the coronavirus. And if you want to know more, listen to Dwayne and I's yesterday's Five Rings podcast, where we spent a half an hour looking at the coronavirus and its potential impact on the sports world globally. And there is an impact in the soccer world that we might have to look into also in Asian soccer. Last topic on today's show, Lewis Binks, young England defender, born in Gillingham, playing for Tottenham Hotspur's under 18 from the academy, and now playing for the under 18 teams. You see him under Spurs colors versus Inter Milan in the under 18 Champions League last spring. Last fall. Yeah, we're not even in the spring yet. So he's linked with the Montreal Impact, according to Vincent Detouche of TVA Sports. And last November, Sofiane Benzaza and Nelson Jorge also hinted at the possibility of seeing the young England center back joining the Montreal Impact. Montreal Impact need defenders. This would be a very low costly measure to have a player of that stature joining the club, with a lot of upsides and not a lot of downsides, which leads me to the creativity of newly named sporting director of the Montreal Impact, Olivier Renard, in his search for talent this offseason. We've seen loans, we've seen 50-50 split, according to some French newspaper, of Zachary Broguillard's worth for the future, and only a $50,000 American or European transfer, which about 75,000 Canadian, which is what we heard, for the young right back. So we've seen a lot of creativity in roster movement for the Montreal Impact, which, yes, it's a lot less costly, and there's a cost measure, like a cost-effective measure in place in the Montreal Impact, and we're seeing Olivier Renard use creativity to build this roster. But is he finding ways that haven't been tapped to their potential over the last few seasons in Major League Soccer, according to you, Dwayne, to get young players to a place that you can get them for cheap a year or two? They're back to their own club. You got out of it what you needed, a player that could play for 2 years, and it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg.
Well, ask me in June whether this is going to work. But yes, it is a unique way to do it, for sure. And I'm not opposed to it. I think that it's a way, particularly when you're a market like Montreal, with all due respect to our listeners in Montreal, where you don't necessarily have the international appeal that a Miami or an LA, we've had this conversation many times before, you don't have the international appeal,
you
right?
You don't have the weather appeal. You don't have the beach appeal. There's some international, but there's a caveat, or you'll freeze your butt off for 4 months also.
Well, I mean, I live in Canada. You do freeze your ass off for 4 months. But
Montreal, born and raised. So,
I love Montreal. You know I love Montreal. You know, don't tell my TFC fans, but it's fine. But look, yeah, they have to be a little creative to get them into the door and then show them what you have. Because exactly what we're just saying, jokes aside, is once you get them here, you're like, oh, this is okay. You know, I just wear layers. It's fine.
Stay indoors. It's fine.
It's fine. June's great. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You thought it was warm in England? Guess what? It's a lot warmer here in the summer. So, no, but I do like that avenue and that tap stream of player movement in England. And if you demonstrate with example this example, if you demonstrate with this player that he actually came here, he got better, came back to Tottenham as a better player a year or two from now, well, you demonstrate your value in the pyramid of player development in the world, and you're making friends and a network. And you, next time they have a good player that they want to send out on loan at 18 to get like good quality minutes with a club, they'll think about you. So I think it is a good avenue, and it's a good way to get to a point of value in Major League Soccer, which oftentimes is how you get ahead. You get a player that is way more valuable with his performances than the $75,000 you'll have on your cap hit. But he doesn't cost you that. He doesn't cost you $2 million. Cost you 75, and you got that value in a salary cap league. That's one avenue to find that value.
Well, listeners, have you played Football Manager before as a lower level team?
What do you do? You loan players. You never buy. Come on, you never buy.
Well, you can't afford to buy. The first thing I do is look at the youth teams of the best teams in the world and say, hey, you want to bring this guy on loan?
Who's not playing? No. Okay. So, well, that's what I do. In FIFA, in my case, I'm not a Football Manager guy. I'm a FIFA guy. Example, I started a career last night. I'm not going to mention the club. It doesn't matter. And you know what you do? No, it wasn't TFC. I would never do that, or I would never say it, but I would. It's kind of boring. I'm not playing in MLS in FIFA. It's kind of boring. There's no like promotion relegation. Sorry, guys. No, I'm not an advocate. Do not send me emails. I'm not going to fight for Pro Rel. But in my video game world, I like my Pro Rel. And that's the caveat. Okay, that's done. Put that aside. Put Pro Rel aside. I like to play with random teams because then I learn things. I like to play with like third division in England, and then next time I see someone from a small town in England, I'm like, "Where are you from?" Like, "Ah, I'm from Port Vale." I love your team. Like, you know, we have a
what?
Team.
Like, you know, yeah. My team.
Yeah. I do. Tom Pope. What? You know, like, I do. Yeah, exactly. So that's why I like it. But that's the fun of it. And I think that's one thing you do is you do get a loany player and you do find someone that is affordable for now, that you give service to that player in his career, and that player comes in, does a service to you by giving you a defender as of this date. You had 6 under contract. So now if that comes through, you have 7. So it does answer a need. So I do think it's a good avenue when you do need to save money. And when you did do bad contract management over the last, it's been 9 seasons in the MLS. So most of their history in Major League Soccer, you had bad contracts on their books, a la Camacho, a la Adrian Aregui, $400,000 to come in and just to have a cup of coffee and to leave again. Yeah, we've seen this many, many times before, not only with the Impact, but across Major League Soccer. And this time is now over. We've seen owners and especially sporting directors being more responsible with the money. And that's one way to make roster movement within your money management conservativeness, I would say.
Look, short-term contracts as a trial are a good idea in Major League Soccer because it is a salary cap league, which is why, Kevin, as funny as it is to say that Mista was one of the worst DP signings in history, you're wrong. It wasn't. It was a 4-month contract and he was done. It was a fine gamble that didn't work out. Not, absolutely not one of the worst DP signings in MLS history. I will die on this hill.
We're looking at you, Steven Gerrard. On that note, you can follow Dwight on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective. Yeah, we might have a few pictures of the kits of tonight, if anything is of note. We'll be back also with more on our premium podcast feed available at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2, $5, and $10 a month will give you access to different tiers, different shows, but always great listens. And until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne, I'm Kevin. We wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.